how can you set practical goals and or habits while also leaving room for the unexpected?
You can fully live doing whatever you're doing right now, sold out totally for God's plan, and have this excitement of knowing where God leads you, even as you try to make the best decisions possible with the stuff that's in front of you.
What do you think of the controversy over AI's environmental impact? Hello, and welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast. I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And Jonathan, I am excited for pretty much every episode that we do, but this one, I don't know about you, is particularly exciting to me because this is our very first Q&A episode. And so we are very grateful for all of you who submitted questions. We've got a handful here. We're not entirely sure whether or not we're going to be able to get to all of them, but I think we've got some pretty good ones here. What do you think?
Yeah, I love Q&A. When I'm speaking live, that's my favorite part of speaking, and I like the fact that you don't know what's coming and see what happens. In this case, we do have a little preview because we had them submit them, but it's super fun to hear what people are thinking about, and I'm looking forward to taking a stab at answering some of those. So,
yeah. All right. And so for this first question comes from Erevis, who is one of our Ascend students, and she actually submitted an audio clip of her asking that question. So we'll let Erevis ask the question herself.
Hi. First, I'd like to thank you for hosting this Q&A episode. I love listening to all your podcasts, and I find them very insightful and encouraging for whatever season of life I'm walking through. My name is Erevis, and my question today is, what are your thoughts on the balance of letting go of your plans and trusting God's plan? I've heard you discuss similar topics to this in previous episodes. You know, you make your plans to launch the next steps you want to take after you graduate, what you're good at, and how you can create value for others with that, but you understand that God and his plans are sovereign. What are your thoughts on on when it's hard to let go of your plans enough to accept God's plan, even if it's different than you expected?
All right. I think this is a classic question that pretty much everybody who is in Christ struggles with at some point or another. Jonathan, I'll let you take an initial stab at this.
Well, I think this balance of letting go of your plans and trusting God's plan, I have grown, David, to be very skeptical of the word balance. So I think that there's a inherent compromise in balance, and I'm not so sure that it is true that we are called to compromise in many areas of our life. When I hear people say like work-life balance, that implies that there is some stasis that you can reach where, you know, you're perfectly balanced between those two. And maybe there's people out there that are a lot smarter than I am, but I've never been able to achieve anything like that. There's an extreme imbalance at certain times, and you kind of have to run those both ways. And so in this sense, this balance of letting go of your plans and trusting God's plan, I think that part of the Christian life is surrendering your plan and making all of your plans in light of God's plan. But I think what Erevis is driving at is that there's this sort of underlying Christian guilt assumption that if I'm not perfectly miserable and at death's door and risking everything and probably in abject poverty, then I'm not doing God's plan. And so consequently, there's an idea here that like, I kind of need to, you know, get a job and I'd like to sort of, you know, have air conditioning, but also want to do some ministry stuff. So I got to sort of balance, you know, my kind of the things that I want to do with the things that God wants me to do. And I just think we should really be careful to reject that and to say that God's plan is pretty simple in understanding. It is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and your neighbor as yourself. And you will do that from wherever you are right now. And if you make every decision in light of that reality and that purpose, then you are by definition doing God's plan. And part of who God made you to be is he has made you in your image. And he's given you the ability to decide and make decisions about what to do next. And so that means you can fully live doing whatever you're doing right now, sold out totally for God's plan, loving him with all your heart, mind, and soul, and your neighbor as yourself, and then be able to lean to that and have this excitement of knowing where God leads you, even as you try to make the best decisions possible with the stuff that's in front of you. And could that lead you into, you know, pieces of extreme self-sacrifice and hardship and all those things? Yeah, that is absolutely possible. And if God is calling you to that, he will make that apparent to you and put that on your heart. Does it mean that you're only doing God's plan if you're miserable? I completely and totally reject that. I think that you will be most happy and most fulfilled when you're doing God's plan. And sometimes that comes with a measure of material comfort, and sometimes it doesn't, and you need not worry about that. You need instead to worry about loving God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and your neighbor as yourself.
Yeah, I think that's the core of what's worth paying attention to here. I'll add on just a couple of notes. For one thing, on balance, I don't have quite as much of an aversion to balance as Jonathan does. I think the difference that I would take is just that balance is going to constantly look different in different stages of where you're at in life, at least in how I kind of look at it personally, and that like there's never going to be a perfect equilibrium, but you're just going to end up finding that kind of like the balance point will change at different points in your life. And that's completely normal and that's completely fine. But I do agree that like you're never going to get it perfect, and that's okay. I think the other part of this that's really worth noting is the expectations that we often have to let go of whenever God's plan is different than ours. I think that's probably one of the most painful parts of realizing that, is that when you have something in mind or you're expecting something to happen, and then God changes it. And that's really hard. I think the most helpful thing that I have ever heard on this was just a friend telling me to try to keep an open hand policy with God. And essentially, it's just the practice of remembering that if everything in your life is a gift from God, which it is, then if we can have an open hand with it and recognize the fact that it's a gift to have anything that we have, and the more that we are able to have an open hand instead of clenching it tightly, then it's going to be a lot less painful if God ends up leading us to let go of something. Because if you're holding on to something really tight, then there's a good chance that you're going to end up hurting yourself when it gets ripped away from you. Whereas if you have an open hand with those things, then it's a lot easier to let those things go. And so at times there's going to be points where it's a lot easier and a lot harder to let go of the things that God is calling you to let go of. But just recognizing and just developing that mindset can be really, really helpful.
And it's worth noting that God asks you to let go of things that you're making an idol of. Mm-hmm. And so one of the ways to guard against, and just to be clear, as humans, we make idols out of everything. And so I'm not speaking to you from one as one who is idol free. You know, I'm not. Right. And so, but I am speaking to you and saying that there's a way not to make an idol of everything. And that is to put things in its proper context. And I think that, you know, we drifted a little bit from Erebus's question in this where I'm taking this next, but I think there's something inherent to this, Erebus. You know, I see people say, well, there's this good thing in my life that I really like, and you know, I'm sure God's asking me to give that up. So let's say you have a friend who has a really nice truck that he's restored, right? And so could that truck become an idol? It absolutely could become an idol. And lots of times we see people who idolize their truck. They spend all their time and money on the truck. They do all these kinds of things in the truck. And that can be an idol, right? I also think you can take care of that truck as an act of worship. You know, and seeing it as every time I use it, it's a blessing. And I can't believe God allowed me to have this. And taking care of it is a way to have dominion over what God and responsibility for what God has given me, and to nurture this blessing. And to David's point, and this is why I brought this up, to hold that with an open hand in this way that I'm enjoying this immensely while I have it as an act of worship to God. And part of enjoying it is that I can give it up in a second and not care. And there is not only an act of worship in that, there is a freedom in that that can be extremely that's freeing. So now I've got a bad analogy going, but it can be, there's a freedom of that that's very desirable, I think, in terms of this is one of the advantages of the practical Christian life, to be able to enjoy one's possessions while not being controlled by them, because you understand that they're God's. And so enjoying them is a blessing and not something that is an idol, and that God can, and that you're willing to give those back to God at any point because you believe that God will provide whatever you need. That is a level of freedom that most people aspire to, but Christians can achieve by ordering and understanding things rightly.
Well said. All right. Our next question, I think, is a really good one to follow up Erebus's question. It comes from Anna, who is another member of our Ascend class. And she asks, how can you set practical goals and or habits while also leaving room for the unexpected to happen?
I'm going to give an answer that is my personal answer, but I'm not submitting it as universal. So the caveat is that I have an answer for this, but I'm not suggesting that my answer is the way everybody should work or that it should work for everybody. I'm just saying this is the way it plays out in my life. Take it or leave it. I read a book a long time ago by Scott. The guy that was the author of the Dilbert comic strips. And the name of the book is How to Fail at Everything and Still Succeed. And it was a very influential book. I was not expecting it at all. I kind of picked it up as a throwaway read. And his primary argument there is that very few people are actually goal setting people, and those people almost always write books. And so consequently, almost all productivity books are written by goal setting people. And he said, there's nothing wrong with being a goal setting person, but most of us operate in a different system. And that is that we're systems people. And he suggested that instead of setting practical goals and habits, it's instead to build systems, which is a little closer to habits, which is that, you know, you try to optimize things as much as possible. So the difference here would be, David, to, you know, maybe your life, you know, to have a goal to run a marathon, Scott would have argued that is to set yourself up to fail every single day except for the moment when you cross the finish line, and then to be in failure again as you get ready for the next goal, right? Hmm. Now, that's a pessimistic way to look at it, and I don't know that I share that pessimism, but there isn't the point is that you're always striving towards a goal. And he would say maybe a different way to do that would be to set a system. I will run 3 miles every day of my life, or 5 days a week or something like that. And then I will be ready and prepared when somebody says, hey, would you like to run a marathon with me? It's a pretty easy step to step into that training plan and complete that marathon, but you're then prepared for the opportunities. And so his argument here is that you build systems, and those systems are more sustainable because they have more, you know, if I don't run on Wednesday, I'll just run Thursday and pick it back up. And so there's a little bit of flexibility in that, which appeals to most people. And that it then sets you up in such a way that when opportunities arise, that you can take advantage of them. I personally, again, not arguing this as a universal, I personally find that a far easier way to live my life. So instead of setting practical goals, I try to build practical systems that then put me in a position that when opportunities come along, when God opens doors, when things are there, that I'm in the position to be able to take advantage of those. So slightly different take on it. And again, a personal one, not something I'm arguing as universal.
Yeah, that's I was not expecting to get wisdom from Scott Adams in this
Scott
podcast.
Adams, thank you. Yeah, sorry, there you go. I had that name that just completely flew out of my mind as I started to talk. Thank you, Dave.
Yep, you're good. To be truly honest with you, I did Google it while you were talking. So,
well, I appreciate that very much.
I think that's a really valid system. The one that I have just recently been adopting that we found really helpful is we talked a lot about this a few episodes ago, the one that we did right after our conversation with Nathan Rittenhouse, where we talked about setting priorities in your life is a really helpful framework for figuring out how to make decisions and just decide what sorts of things that you want to invest your time into at any given point. And so actually my wife and I just recently sat down and just wrote out on sticky notes. We just sat down at a table and had, you know, 10 sticky notes, and we wrote down like what are the big priorities that we have in our life. And so, you know, obviously, you know, following God and building his kingdom was number one. And then, you know, we have other really important things to us, like family, investing in our marriage. And then, you know, there's some other things like travel and, you know, different opportunities like that. And so then we just like sat down with those, and then we just were able to swap them around and find an order that we thought at very least for our current stage in life we want, it was reflected what we wanted to spend our time in and prioritize. And we agreed this isn't what we want it to be long term. So, for example, like right now, travel is not on, is not quite as high on our priority list as we would like for it to be long term. We want to do more traveling later, but just because of the stage of life we're in, we're having to put it lower right now than we will later. And that's fine. And that doesn't mean that it's not still a priority for us and that it can't get higher later. And so we found that that's really helpful in trying to evaluate what sort of decisions you want to make, is just having that very clear lineup that you can reflect back to.
I think it's worth noting that Anna's wisdom in here is like leaving room for the unexpected to happen. It might be worth just noting that the unexpected will be better, bigger than the expected. And that for me was the compelling reason to shift to away from sort of a specific goal driven. And I just want you to know, I mean, I spend a lot of money on courses and books. And, you know, I used to force my family to sit down and write out our goals for the year. And you know, what I found for us, and again, not a universal, but for us, those ended up being an exercise of defeat. We would begin the year with a bunch of goals. They would not be realized. At the next year, we would then pretend like we hadn't just failed abysmally at all those goals and would do something else. And then when I started to sit down and go, well, why didn't they get realized? Was it because of a lack of effort or a lack of skill or a lack of commitment? No, it was almost always because something unexpected came up. And sometimes it was an unexpected tragedy, but more often it was an unexpected opportunity. You know, the goal that we set was too small, you know, or was it, or it didn't meet our priorities, to your point anymore, David. And so that was interesting in this, like, wow, we're putting ourselves in a situation where we feel like we're failing all the time when we're actually succeeding at things that we didn't know we had an opportunity to be successful at. And so that's worth noting, that the unexpected will always be more than the expected. And what you can control is always bigger than what you can control. And therefore, it behooves you to have some wisdom in at least acknowledging that reality as you set your goals or systems or whatever. I also believe that it is, you know, part of being human to be able to set systems and goals and have aspirations and priorities and all those things. I think those are important, but they'll work best when you make the room for the unexpected that's going to be inevitable.
All right. Our next question is from Shaylee, who asks, what are the odds if someone does ascend that they will end up breaking in or out of jail?
So any good organization should have some inside jokes. And the inside jokes are even more fun when they're said publicly and only understood by a few. And so Shaylee is an Ascend alumni. This is an inside joke. And so I'll respond in kind and say, Shaylee, it will have a great deal to do with who you hang out with. And for those of you who are listening, just to be clear, to date, we have not had the necessity to break anybody in or out of jail. But Shaylee will understand that answer. And so will a lot of other people listening who will understand that. So that was a fun question. And thanks, Shaylee, for you have a chance to respond again. So.
All right. Our next question actually comes from Mrs. Timken, who asks us, since you travel so much, what are your favorite travel tips?
I can't wait to hear David's answer for these. And so I was thinking about this a little bit, and my tips are not profound. But here's a couple of things I can throw out. The first is, I travel a lot, and I like to have at least one routine that I do the same on the road as I do at home. And for me, some of you may know, I don't drink alcohol and I don't drink coffee. And so I had to be a snob about something. So I picked tea. So I only drink loose leaf tea, which means nobody else makes it, which means I have to make it myself. And so I bring the means of production with me on the road so I can make my tea in the morning just like I would at home, or as close to as possible as home. I have to do it slightly differently than the road, but the point is I make tea in the morning just like I do at home. And so having that kind of continuity between home and away is pretty helpful. And then the other two are just somewhat silly travel tips, but things that can make a big difference. If you stay in a hotel, hotel water from the tap is drinkable, but kind of tastes lousy. And I just hate paying for bottled water. And so it might be really good to know that almost every hotel, especially business class hotels, has a workout room. And that workout room almost always has chilled, filtered water. And so I go to the hotel and I check in, and I drop down the evening before and generally the morning before I leave, and I fill my water bottle up with chilled, filtered water from the workout room, which is generally the best water in the hotel, and I don't have to pay for it. And the final thing is, this is a whole separate podcast. I really despise new cars. I have to drive new cars or rental cars. I hate them in so many ways that we can talk about some other time. But most cars, with the exception of the weird new rental ones that have more bells and whistles than is good for them, if you look where your gas fuel gauge is, will have an arrow telling you which side the fuel door is on. And that can be really helpful if you're going to fill up gas in a brand new car and trying to decide which side of the pump to pull up to. So those are my practical and somewhat silly travel tips, David.
No, I don't think that they're silly at all. I think those are actually really helpful. Having, tried to power my way through absolutely awful tasting hotel water a lot of times. The workout room is significantly better. I didn't realize that until I started getting more active and starting using that. I think I'll go with mine being a little bit more air travel specific, just because that tends to be the kind of travel that's the most complicated and that people are the most nervous about. For one thing, I think it is highly, highly worth it to invest in some sort of GPS tracker. If you're an Apple user, AirTags are great, or if you're not, the Tile trackers are what I personally use. And especially if you are checking a bag, or if you're not necessarily planning on checking a bag, but if you have a larger like roller bag, and a lot of the time you'll end up having to check it if you're flying economy, keep that tag in there, because if it ends up getting lost, then you can just go right to the app and find out exactly where it is, and that can be really helpful. You can actually show that to the airport staff if it gets lost and say, hey, my bag's not where it's supposed to be. I can see exactly where it is right now. And then that will eliminate a lot of the confusion on that front. And then my other really practical one is that if you're trying to figure out what you can or cannot bring on a flight, TSA actually on their website, you can Google this, has a list that you can search of basically anything that you can think of. And you can just type in whatever you're wondering about, and it just has like a little table, and it will tell you whether or not you can bring that thing in your carry-on and whether or not you can bring that thing in your checked bag. And it will tell you if there's like special instructions for, like, you know, what, say for example, like you're wondering if you can bring batteries, like if there's like specific kinds of batteries that's like you can or can't bring. And so I have used that quite a few times, especially packing up media gear, for example. We're going to be getting ready to go to Capstone, our next event, pretty soon, and I'm going to be flying with a bunch of media gear, and I was wondering, can I fly with some of this stuff? And so I had to end up looking that up, and I've done that numerous times, and it's really helpful. So I would highly recommend bookmarking that page.
Our final tip is more of a system, and if you've been around Unbound for a little bit, this is going to sound completely normal to you, but my biggest, it's not tip, my biggest, and I will call this advice, maybe even mandate, is to remember that everybody you meet in the airport, including the TSA agents and the people working the flight desks, are made in the image of God. And keeping that in mind and treating them and those interactions as having eternal consequences changes everything. I will just tell you flat out that I really don't like TSA, and I really get frustrated with airlines and the way they treat customers and passengers. And those are deep frustrations of mine. But I will also tell you, I've had almost no bad experiences with TSA agents or desk agents. And that's partly because no matter how frustrated I am when I see them, I have to remember they are made in the image of God and need to be treated with the dignity and respect those made in the image of God are owed. And unfortunately, most of our fellow travelers forget that. And these are people that soak up an awful lot of abuse. And if you're the person that comes in and treats them as human, which they absolutely are, things are likely to go tremendously better for you. That's a nice benefit, but that's not the reason you do it. The reason you do it is because that's what you're supposed to do.
Very true. And it's always worth it, especially if you can get a smile out of a TSA worker, just knowing how hard their job is. It's a good feeling. It's a really good feeling. All right. Next up, we have actually a few questions submitted by Nick, who is one of our Ascend team leaders and an Ascend alumni. And so we are very grateful to get some really good questions from Nick. And his first one that he submitted here is, what would you say are the three most vital traits a leader must possess? We have to narrow it down to three, Jonathan.
Well, I think I can do that, and I would even maybe go a step further and put them slightly in order. I think the first most important vital trait for a leader is the ability to accept accountability. And so your primary job as a leader is to accept accountability. We joke at Unbound and call it the chief wringable neck, which I didn't come up with. Was somebody from the previous company, the CEO, used that term a lot, and I thought it was really helpful. Extreme accountability, extreme ownership is the way Jocko Willink puts it. As a leader, everything under you is your personal responsibility, period, full stop, the end. And anything that goes wrong is your fault. Anything that goes right is to be attributed to your people. So extreme accountability would be one. The second would be humility. If you fail to have humility as a leader, you will rise to the level of your talent. And I don't know, you could be really talented and you could rise really far with that, but there will be a cap. And to really get the most out of your leadership opportunity, you want to exceed your own ability. And I feel this really keenly. I don't think anything I have been responsible for as a leader has that I've had the ability to actually make successful. And the fact that I have been involved in things that are successful are a measure of the fact that I've been surrounded by and working with really excellent people. But if you do not have the humility to say that and let those excellent people work, you'll never take advantage of that, and you'll be limited by your own personal ability. And in my case, that would be crippling. It would be real problems there. So accountability, humility, and then the third has got to be vision. And I think with vision comes a sense of optimism. Now, you need to be a realist as a leader, and I'm not saying that you have to be Pollyannish. I don't think you have to be naive. But as a leader, you have to have a deep, grounded, full sense of this is possible. And whatever is possible, you have to envision getting there. And part of your job as a leader is to define for the team that you're working with what success looks like and inspire them to reach that. And if you're not able to do that, then you're not leading anywhere. People want to know where they're going. They want to know why they're going there, and they want to believe it's possible. And if you can do that, then people go some pretty incredible places. But they'll do it even more so if you accept full responsibility and have the humility to allow them to help you figure out how to get to those places. So from my experience, those would be the things that I would lay out.
And you have a lot of experience, Jonathan. So I think that's an excellent list. And I'm even more pleased because I did write down my top three before you started talking. And I feel like I kind of passed the test a little bit. Mine were very close to yours. So the humility and the first two that you put on their ownership. Was that the first one you went with? I kind of put those under the same umbrella of humility, kind of taking ownership of what you're doing and vision. The other one that I would probably contend is extremely important would be, you could phrase it either as honesty or transparency. I think that's extremely, extremely transformative, as someone who has, led various projects and, just been under many, many leaders. The more transparent and willing to just accept reality and communicate the reality of where they're at and where the team is at any given point is absolutely transformative, especially when it comes to building trust. I am so much more willing to trust a leader who is willing to say the things that are not comfortable to say, but are true nonetheless. I am so much more comfortable following that kind of leader than someone who is just all bravado and all just everything's going great. You guys are great. We can do this, and is not willing to talk about everything else that we can all see. We can all see the reality that not everything is always going to be peachy, but somebody who's willing to acknowledge that is really, really significantly more respectable, in my opinion.
Traditional education doesn't work for everyone. If you or your student wants something different, check out Ascend by Unbound. With flexible courses, real-world projects, mentorship, and community, Ascend equips young adults to thrive academically, professionally, and personally. Students consistently say that the close-knit support and resume-ready experience are their favorite parts. Enrollment prices rise soon, so don't wait. Find your track at beunbound.us/ascend.
Great answers.
All right. The next question from Nick is that many young people today seem far more disconnected and mentally checked out, lacking the normal passions normally seen. Is there a strategy you have found to connect with youth who find themselves incredibly unmotivated about life and learning? I feel like this is kind of one of Unbound's main missions. So I feel like I'm going to have to kind of rein you in a little bit here, Jonathan, because you could do a whole podcast about this on your own. I know it for a fact.
Why don't you start, David? How do you answer that? And then we'll try to keep my answer under control.
Yeah. Specific strategy for those who are unmotivated. I think a lot of the times, in my experience with young people, the ones who feel unmotivated are the ones who just see either too many or too few possibilities and then just don't see a path to get to any of those possibilities. A lot of the time they think either they see everything that people are doing on Instagram, like all of the influencers who are able to do these amazing things, build things, go on adventures, accomplish amazing things. And they feel as though, OK, if I can't reach that really high standard, then it's not worth it for me to even try. And so a lot of the time, the easier solution to that is, well, I might as well not even try, and I will just do what is comfortable for me. And this is not a new problem. This has been a problem throughout all of human history and is inherent to human nature. It's just kind of manifested some new ways. And so I think my encouragement that I have tried to give to a lot of young people that I've talked to who struggle with this is just to, for one thing, don't underestimate the result of small but consistent efforts. Those things can build up over time into results that will genuinely shock you. And those small, consistent efforts, half the time that's going to help you feel more motivated than actually reaching the goal. I think that a lot of the times we elevate the end goal, the end result, far more than the process that it takes to get to an end result. And the process, I think, is where we get the majority of the benefit of working towards any sort of goal or anything that we might be working towards. The process of learning and failing and then getting back up and learning from that failure and doing that over and over and over again and persisting through that. It's hard because it's really, really easy for that failure to be discouraging and to try to take that on into part of your identity and say, oh, I failed, therefore I am a failure, therefore it's not worth it for me to try again. But when you're able to get past that and continue striving forward and keep that momentum going, man, the amount of progress that you can make and see in yourself is so exciting. And that, I think, is one of the greatest ways to find motivation is just to start. And even if it's not something that is, necessarily the most transformational thing by, the world standards, even if it's not like a massive, massive goal, it's more than you're doing now. And it's something new that you're going to learn from. And I think starting into something like that is incredibly valuable.
My answer would be that it says, why are many young people seem far more disconnected, mentally checked out? I'm not arguing that that's not the case. I would just argue strongly that if that is your expectation, that is absolutely what you will find. Now I want to be careful here. I'm not arguing that young people may not be checked out and mentally disconnected. I'm just saying that if you have an expectation that they're mentally checked in and connected, you're more likely to find that expectation met than if you have the opposite expectation. And so I start with an expectation that any young people I'm working with will want to be connected and plugged in and mentally and checked in and all those kinds of things. And the second thing is, I believe that that expectation is solid because I believe that is a reflection of reality. Every young person I meet, regardless of where they're from, is made in the image of God. Therefore, they share some of the characteristics of God. And one of those primary characteristics is to be creative and to create and have dominion over things and all those kinds of things. That's what it means to be human. And so that means at some level, there is a desire to be checked in and passionate about life. And if that is the inherent reality, then my job in every indication, in every interaction, as much as I've been vested that authority by my relationship with this person, is to find a way to reignite and reconnect the reality that is already there. I don't have to place those expectations in somebody, they're already built into the fabric of who they are. And that is broad, but I think it has to be broad, because then the way you connect with somebody and get them mentally checked in and passionate about life is going to be as various as the different people in the world, right? like it's going to require this individual application in each case. But you can't get to that point of figuring out that individual stuff until you accept the base reality. And to me, that's the most important thing. I have an expectation that they're going to be like this because I think that reflects reality. And with that expectation now, I'm going to pray to God and I'm going to do my best in terms of the authority God has given me in that person's life, which could be zero, passing them on the street and just say hello and smile at them, or it could be significant. They're a student in ascent, or even more significant, they're my children. And in each case, react appropriately.
There we go. Hey, see, you didn't have to do a whole podcast on it, but I think that was still a valuable answer.
We could.
And we might, and probably we will. Right. All right. All right. Next final question here gets a little bit political. Jonathan, you ready?
Oh, let's do it. Yeah.
All right. He asks, I was wondering if either of you have looked into the movement being labeled the woke right that seems to be emerging in the podcast and social media worlds. It seems to be associated with individuals like Tucker Carlson, Nick Fuentes, or Candace Owens. Some say it has a significant Christian listening base. Do you see it as a small phase that is likely to pass rather quickly, or a more embedded worldview? Do you have any sources you would recommend for someone wanting to gain a better understanding of the movement?
I'm going to have to say, David, that I don't know about this movement. I don't listen to Tucker Carlson, Nick Fuentes, or Candace Owens at all. I don't pay attention to what they say. I don't have really any time for them. And if that says something and reflects my opinion, you're probably right. So I just don't have time. I only have so much time, and I don't have time to listen to things that I think are somewhat ridiculous or crazy. And that's not to say they have nothing good to say. It's just that I don't have time to sort through it. So in terms of, do you have any sources you'd recommend to someone to get a better understanding of the movement? I don't know about the movement. I don't have enough knowledge of it. And so this is you don't have to have an opinion about everything. And I don't have an opinion about this. I don't know a lot about it. I don't listen to these people, and therefore I don't have a lot of knowledge of what is being said. If we would rephrase the question slightly and say, do you have any sources you would recommend, period? Then I do. I get a lot of important information that I really appreciate from places like The World and Everything in It, from the Breakpoint podcast, from Thinking Out Loud Ministries, run by Nathan Rittenhouse and Cameron McAllister. Those are three. That's not the only ones I listen to, but those are three, I think, extraordinarily good, insightful, and wise sources of information that I listen to on a more regular basis. And because I listen to them, I don't have time to listen to other places, including some of the sources here. So beyond that, I'm not saying there's nothing important here, and I'm not saying there's not something substantive here. It's outside of my experience and purview.
Yeah, I had not had a whole lot of familiarity with these individuals. So I did do a little bit of looking around before we recorded this. And from what I understand, based on the things that I read, is that it sounds like the woke right essentially is just a movement of people who are on, conservative politically, who are kind of taking some of the tactics of what are traditionally liberals, such as, participating in cancel culture and playing a little bit more with identity politics and things like that. And I won't give too much of an opinion on this because, similarly to Jonathan, this isn't something that I have a whole lot of knowledge and insight into. But I would just say that doesn't terribly surprise me that there's going to be tactics that on one side of the aisle that are going to eventually get used on the other side of the aisle. And so I don't find that terribly surprising. And so I personally don't think that it's something that is terribly concerning to me, because I think that there's a lot of other ideologies at play that I think are worth paying attention to more. And to Jonathan's point, as far as sources, I agree, all of those sources are really solid. A fun thing that I like to do, that maybe this is just personally something fun for me, is that every morning I get a news digest from Fox News, CNN, and the Associated Press, and I read through all of them, and I get a wide variety of perspectives, and I almost always am very frustrated at one of them, And I will end up appreciating the take that another has on them. And that varies from day to day, depending on what sort of stories are coming up. And so maybe that's not something that everyone is going to be able to appreciate like I do, but I almost always get a little bit of a chuckle out of contrasting those every morning.
Yeah, my version of that is I listen to The World and Everything in it and immediately listen to The Economist, the intelligence from The Economist. And those two have very different worldviews. I also listen to a commentator named Peter Zion, who is pretty consistently fairly rabidly anti-Trump. And I read a blog called Coffee and COVID, which is pretty consistently wildly pro-Trump. I rarely agree with either one. but if I read them and listen to them back to back, I get a pretty good perspective of various opinions. And like you, David, I get a big kick out of that and find that that gives me some perspective and at least some balanced information. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have just a handful more questions. We had the option for people to submit questions anonymously, and so we can just blitz through these last few here that were submitted anonymously. One quick question that came from an anonymous user. How do you power through tasks you dislike?
Same way I do push-ups and run miles. I just do it. I don't know. I don't think there's any secret here. There will always be tasks you dislike, and they will need to be done. And the only answer I know is discipline. And discipline means doing them. Mm-hmm. And that is the good news is it's not more complicated than that. And the bad news is there's no secret formula from my perspective. So,
yep. I would tend to agree with that. The only things I would add would be it gets easier the more that you do those tasks or activities that you dislike. And eventually the things that you dislike might end up actually becoming things that you appreciate for some reason or another. And if you are able to keep in mind the why behind the reason that you're doing them, that tends to, at least in my mind, make it a lot easier to power through them, even if I dislike them, because I know that it is for something that is more important than what it actually seems like in the moment. Next question is, what do you think of the controversy over AI's environmental impact?
Well, I'm going to throw this back to you, David. Do you have any experience here? This is another place that I do have some opinions, and I do have some information here, more than our last question I passed on. But to be clear, it's not an area of expertise, so I'll ask if you have any opinions first.
Yeah, it's an interesting one to think through. I think there's a lot of the consequences of the rise of AI and how popular it has become and how quickly that has risen that we are still trying to understand. And I think that it is very worthwhile to be a little bit nervous about just how rapidly it has grown and how many infrastructures are being built around it at this point, and just how much is getting invested into it. There is a lot of really great opportunity. There's a lot of really great things that are coming from AI. The advances that are being made in the medical world because of it are astounding and absolutely amazing. But there's a lot of negative consequences. And so I think that comes from anything to, you know, the big one that ends up being talked about a lot is water usage from AI. And I think that that's part of it. To some extent, I would also say that the thing that's even more concerning is just like the stress that it puts on just our energy in general and just our power grids and the way that we generate energy. In my opinion, I think that we had not done nearly enough in just the United States to invest in good long term sources of energy, just because we would rather build up things quickly that will work and that will give us the power that we need right now for the things that we're investing in right now, like data centers. And I think that there's a lot of other resources like nuclear power that I think would be a lot more effective and generally actually have lower environmental impact because they are pretty safe at this point with the technology that's advanced in them and that would be able to help us long term. But it's hard to incentivize people to do that because they would rather just build up something quickly. So there's my quick take on it is that I have concerns, but I don't think that I think it's a very complicated issue that's hard to address specifically.
My two thoughts are that AI's limitations are going to be primarily energy driven, not technologically driven. And that is going to have massive geopolitical implications. And I think we're seeing that played out. And I think actually most people who are focused on Iran are missing a bigger energy picture. That is actually the main thing that's happening here. So I think that that's worth noting, that the limitations of AI are almost certainly going to be energy, not technology. And the second is, if I had an optimistic spin on it, it's actually a reflective of what David said there at the end. And that is that if we're going to be optimistic, I think the energy demands of AI are going to be so extreme that they're not going to be met with conventional energy production at the moment. And consequently, the only realistic solution will be nuclear. And I think that's good, because I think that the fact that we are not using nuclear power is one of the biggest tragedies of the modern world. It is an absolutely amazing source of power that has far better implications for the environment. And the fact that we don't use it because of some sort of, I think, misfounded fears is one of the major missed opportunities of the last 50 years in terms of energy production. And I suspect that the sheer raw capitalistic greed-based forces that will make people want to make money out of AI is going to force them into nuclear power, which ultimately is probably going to be good on a large scale for all of us from an energy standpoint. However, if we're going to be pessimistic, in between now and then, you're going to pay a lot more money for energy. And that's going to be difficult for those of us who are going to be pinched by that. And it's, you know, nuclear power is not something you turn on tomorrow. And so there's going to be a period here where the cheap energy we've enjoyed for most of our lifetimes is not going to be a reality.
Very, very true. All right. I think there is one final question.
Yeah, but
here.
It's yours, not mine, man.
The reason for that is that the final question here is, can you give us a word of wisdom? Now, this for those of you who are not in on this particular joke that has persisted through the Unbound community, is a little bit of a running joke that is specifically has to do with me. All I will say to those listeners who are not familiar with this is that I have a whole Instagram account that is dedicated to this that you can find if you would like to go and see. I believe just Mr. Words of Wisdom. You can go and try to figure out the context for that. Enjoy going down that rabbit hole that I think has been mostly encouraged by the Ascend community. And so in response to this, I will note that this question asker only asked for a word of wisdom. They did not ask for words of wisdom. So I will simply give a singular word of wisdom. And that word of wisdom is persistence. And I will leave you with that.
And we will then wrap up this podcast and leave you with that as well. This is likely the last podcast we record before David and I head out to Colorado for the final event for our Ascend year, which is Capstone. It is always a highlight and indeed a Capstone event for our year. It is always a little bittersweet as well. We are looking forward to seeing all of our students, and we also know this is the last official event that we'll do with this particular group of students. But we're looking forward to wrapping up the year. If you're interested in Ascend, and if you're interested in what Capstone might look like, you can go to BeUnbound.us to learn more about Ascend and other programs at Unbound. And you can go to our YouTube channel, the Be Unbound YouTube channel, and you can find our wrap-up video from Capstone last year to get some sense of where we're going and what it looks like. Until next time, be Unbound.